This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to Just Rugby NZ, where we'll talk about anything as long as it's rugby. I'm Grant Harding, and with me to talk the talk is Rugby News Magazine editor Campbell Burns. Well, Campbell, it was probably my storm weekend, to be fair. My province of origin lost the Ranfurly Shield in the last play of the game, and only hours later the All Blacks again went down to the Springboks. Let's start with the test in Cape Town, where the All Blacks came out on the wrong side of the ledger, 18-12 to the box. But where do you start? The lack of connection, execution on attack, aimless kicking, inability to defuse the box high kicks, poor start after half time, a confused bench strategy, or a box side who have now won the World Cup, the Freedom Cup, and are ending games over the top of us, no matter who they have on the field. Your thoughts?
Yes, it's hard to pinpoint exactly, but there were several reasons, and you've just listed some of them. The first half was pretty good from the All Blacks, but they didn't convert their opportunities. They led 9-3 then. I thought the forwards played pretty well, other than a creaky scrum at the start. But for the most part, the forwards competed hard. They had some outstanding performers, and Tupou Vaiai and Cody Taylor, Wallace Atiti made a couple of breaks. But the surprising stat for me in the end was that the box missed 37 tackles, and yet the All Blacks didn't manage to score a try, which means that the box scrambled well and the All Blacks weren't able to control the ball. Their skills would let them down on the second or third phase. So that was one issue there. And then, of course, the use of the bench. The Springboks again went early to most of their bomb squad, and they had a 5-3 split, which was a bit different. But the All Blacks weren't able to really control things. They missed a couple of goals, and then they just started to, there was poor skill execution on several occasions right in the clutch. It didn't help that Tyro Lomax was obviously carded with about 7 minutes to go for a fairly stupid penalty. So, once again, failing to control things. We know the box are certainly the best closers in world rugby, but the All Blacks didn't get really what they needed off their bench. And, it was a familiar story, very much like the first test in some ways, although the All Blacks at least scored four tries in that first test, but they weren't able to cross the line here.
You mentioned the Lomax yellow card, but, should Lomax have even been on the field at that stage? I mean, it was 73 minutes in. It looked like a bit of lazy, not thinking kind of play. And the use of the bench has to be looked at. I mean, Darry didn't even get on. Amua came on as a head injury replacement and then never came back. Two props didn't come on until after the 70-minute mark. It shows a disturbing lack of faith in the bench, in my opinion.
Well, that's right. Just apart from the idea of fresh legs, because we know the All Blacks are certainly fit enough. I still think they're one of the fittest sides. So they've often finished over the top of sides. But when you're getting overrun by the box, who actually had slowed the game down to their pace, they started to dictate momentum. Then you have to look at those tactical subs. And the All Blacks, I don't think, got that right. Fletcher Newell only came on the field at 75 minutes for Ioane, and that was only due to having to come on for a scrum. But there was only 4 minutes to go. I think his counterpart, Vincent Cock, was on at about the 52-minute mark. So the box already had all their subs on and performing and right into the game, and the All Blacks leaving it very, very late for some of their forward subs in particular. So, and that's got to be on Scott Robertson, how he marshals his subs.
It certainly does. And the regression in attack, you mentioned, I mean, the All Blacks scored 4-3 in the first test. That was a bright spot. Admittedly, Caleb Clark, who scored a couple of them, was out injured for this test. But we saw a number of moments which you've alluded to with the second and third phase. The Ratama forward pass to Moore, the defence had something to do with that. The Rico Ioane dropping a pass when McKenzie threw it over the top, And then one of the very poor ones was when Geordie Barrett did a beautiful piece of work chasing up the kick, which hit the post, regathered it. We're 5 or 6 metres out, and Perenara threw a terrible pass, and we're suddenly back at the 22. They kept attacking, but then Scott Barrett dropped the ball. And these are the kind of mistakes that are costing the All Blacks big time.
Well, they certainly are, and it's mystifying that skill execution as to why that's happening, because they're creating the opportunities and then just the last pass will go astray. We're seeing it a lot in the NPC, but these are players who are not, some of them are not full-time pros, the All Blacks are. And so on the face of it, you say, well, 18-12, you know, we were still within 6 points, and if we converted all our opportunities and kicked all our goals, we might have won. But it just didn't seem quite like the first test where we were in quite a measure of control and then just lost it in the last 15. Here, I think it was a good first half, but even with a 6-point lead, there was never that feeling that the All Blacks would have been confident that they could put the foot on the throat or exert pressure in the way they need to. And that was surprising because, as I said, I thought the forwards were physical. They got through a lot of tackling. They were pretty good in the line-out for the most part. And the scrum got better. So, you know, Jason Ryan's obviously doing a good job with the forwards, but we're not seeing that direction in behind and the finishing. And whether some of that's on Damien McKenzie and the game drivers, hard to say exactly, but there was certainly a lack of skill execution and accuracy, which is a concern 7 tests in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you see things like Tupou Vai, he nicks a South African line out and then we drive to midfield and get a penalty and then you don't get the reward. McKenzie misses from straight in front. Okay, goal kickers miss, that's fair enough. 13-12 down, but then South Africa attack, there's a yellow card and Mark scores the try, which pretty much seals the game. You know, that's, you want to see good play rewarded, and normally in test match rugby, what you get is that good play is rewarded, and that's where the All Blacks are falling down at the moment. They're just not finishing off their chances.
No, that's right. And there was a time a few years back where there was a big question mark about how the All Blacks would respond when the heat went on, but then they became the fittest side of the world in the world, and they would close out these close games. Now it seems to be much more of a concern that they're not able to close that out. They've had Damien McKenzie, who started all 7 tests this year, and yet there just seems to still be a lack of clarity. And whether that's a hangover from what Leon McDonald was trying to do and what they're trying to do now is hard to say, but needs fixing fairly smartly.
Look, I've followed the All Blacks for too long to adjust standards to results. So I say close enough is not good enough, you know. Both tests were there for the taking. And let's face it, there's a tour to South Africa in 2026. Four tests against them that year. We need to put a dent in their armour next year.
Yes, we certainly do. But it's a funny thing, though, with the box, because they were looking a bit more expensive against Australia, and I guess they could afford to be there. It wasn't quite the same gnarly test matches as we've seen in the last two. But the box haven't necessarily been on their game, but they've reverted to type. They've slowed the game down to their pace, and they've closed it out where they know they can get real impact from their bench. So the box have sort of reverted to type to win two very tight test matches. The All Blacks have, you could argue that they've dominated for about 100, 110 minutes of the 180, but in the end it doesn't count until what happens at the 80-minute mark.
Yeah, it's a bit early to push the panic button, but I mean, you know, by the way, the four losses in a row of 1949, which have been matched, was actually six in a row because we lost the last two of the 1937 series. So there's still wiggle room. But right now, the All Blacks have to convince the public they have what it takes with two comprehensive victories over Australia, or we need to go into rebuild mode. Australia took a hell of a beating in Argentina on Sunday morning, New Zealand time. They were up 20-3 at the 30-minute mark and lost 67-27 to a Pumas side who flicked a switch and played probably the most attractive rugby of the championship. And in the loose forward, Joaquin Oviedo, they have a new star off the bench.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, watching that game, it was remarkable because the Wallabies led 20-3 and then the Pumas only took the lead at the 48-minute mark. But I think the weather, if I can say, it was a level of the week before in the wet and the Wallabies won, but the Pumas actually quite enjoy the sun on their back and moving the ball now, and they just cut loose late, and it just looked like the Wallabies were swamped. But, it was only 12 years ago Graham Henry was saying, well, the Pumas need to score more tries. Well, they've developed their game nicely over the years to the point where now they've had two wins in this rugby championship, and they'll be eyeing up at least one maybe against the Box. But they've actually they've got some talent out wide to move the ball. They get continuity. Malia had a brace. Oviedo, as you mentioned, had a brace as well. And the Wallabies, it just fell apart for them. It was a very different falling apart to the All Blacks struggling late in their game, because the tackling just went and the scrum pressure from the Pumas began to take its toll late in the game.
Yeah, well, they were overrun, weren't they, in the end. But, I mean, they got back to 41-27 in the 67th minute and then conceded four tries. It was, pretty shocking defence, really. A few players out with injury. But I think all credit to Los Pumas. Some great micro skills on display there. Those lovely little three or four pass moves down the touchlines. They're really good to watch. Do you give them a chance against the Box?
Well, possibly in Argentina for one of those tests. If they can exert some real pressure in the forwards, then they can kick their goals. They are a chance, I think. They're not as good a side as the Box all round, but I think in their home conditions, on perhaps a day like that, they could well push the Box very hard.
Yeah. I think they are very much a chance for at least one victory there. The Pacific Nations Cup semi-finalists have been found after the final matches in the round robin. Pool A, Fiji beat Tonga 50-19, meaning Fiji and Samoa progress. And in Pool B, Japan beat USA 41-24. They're both through to the semi-finals. So this coming weekend, Pool A top seed Fiji play USA. Pool B top seed Japan play Samoa, and Canada play Tonga in the 5th-6th playoff. All those matches are going to be played in Tokyo, aren't they, Campbell?
Yes, I believe so. So certainly Japan and Fiji would be favourites there. Samoa depends what sort of side they can put out. Some of their players came back and played a bit of NPC over the weekend, so whether they can head back and bolster Manu Samoa. But, you'd think Japan and Fiji would be certainly favourites to go through to that final in 10 days' time.
Definitely. You're listening to Just Rugby NZ with Grant Harding and Rugby News magazine editor Campbell Burns. Campbell, the latest rugby news is on the newsstands now, I've seen, and it's plenty to read in this month's issue, including a feature on the Box midfield, Jesse Creel and Damien D'Olindo, who we couldn't break down at the weekend, and All Black midfielder Billy Proctor, who I hope we get to see in the Bledisloe series, and also one of Wellington's top players, Jackson Garden-Bashup. He's been a bit of an I've been everywhere man. You've got everything covered from the international to the domestic scene and even schools. A good piece in there about Nigel Hotham, father of several notables, including an All Black and Olympic gold medalist and a New Zealand touch rep, but also a fine coach for many years at Hamilton Boys High School. Quite timely, given that Hamilton are once again top four champions.
Yeah, that's right. But they weren't Super 8 champions. They went to Tauranga Boys. But with the way the Chiefs qualification goes, you can still make it to the top four. And as Hamilton have done on several occasions, I think that might be their fifth or sixth national title, which is a fair effort given Nigel had to exit a few weeks ago. But that there's a good story in there by Adam Julian. And, of course, 100 years of Manu Samoa rugby, which we've done a bit of a potted history looking back at 100 years of rugby in Samoa, which they celebrated with gusto about 10 days ago, I think. So it's all there on Rugby News, which is out now.
Yeah, and, Hamilton beat Nelson College in the final, so that's a great result for Nelson College as well to make the final. Rugby pretty strong in the Tasman area at the moment. The girls' final was won by Manukura from Palmerston North. They're becoming a rugby powerhouse, Manukura. They won it last year as well. To the Bunnings NPC, Waikato beat Northland 34-19. Midweek, Bay of Plenty hammered Manawatu 68-14 on Friday. Wellington too good for Southland, 36-12. Auckland finally got a win, a come-from-behind dramatic and somewhat controversial win, beating North Harbour 36-32. Canterbury turned around a half-time deficit in Dunedin to beat Otago comfortably, 34-16. On Sunday, Taranaki snuck home in the final minutes against Waikato, 25-19. A try to Josh Jacob, who hadn't had the best day with his kicking boots, and there looked to be a forward pass in that movement, I've got to say. Waikato unlucky not to finish their storm week unbeaten. And Canterbury Brownies Manukau picked up their second consecutive win, beating Northland 25-14, moving themselves into the top eight in the process. So that's a great couple of weeks, couple of weekends for Counties Manukau. But the match of the weekend, Ramfordy Shield match on Saturday night, the Tasman Marco stealing the prize log of wood with the final play of the game. Campbell Parata wrote himself into the history of New Zealand rugby with a 43-metre penalty goal for a 25-24 win. A heck of a game, Campbell.
Oh, it was, yeah. I mean, Tasman were dominant in that first half, but Hawke's Bay, as they've done most of the season, managed to claw their way back into the game, and I thought they'd done it. And then came a big play from Timothy Tavatavanawai, who has often come up with big plays for the Marco. He won that last penalty on the ground, so it was hard to get a good look as to whether that was the correct call, but that was a fine bit of play from him because he went for it, and he got the penalty. And then Campbell Parata just stepped up and didn't seem to be any doubt in his mind. He wanted the ball, and I took confidence from that, and I just thought in the back of my mind, he is going to kick this, and he did. And Tasman Marco, so the first time in 50 years we've seen the Ranfurly Shield at the top of the South Island, so well-deserved in the end. But it was a hell of a game. That second half, I thought the Magpies had done enough. Their scrum was going well in the clutch. They scored that try to Prothero in the corner, nailed the conversion, and then they just looked as though they were finding a way to win, but it wasn't to be. So a sterling Ranfurly Shield challenge in front of about 8,000, I think, in Napier. So a worthy classic.
Yeah, that's amazing that you felt that Campbell Parata would kick that goal. I did too. You could just tell by the confidence of the young fellow as he stepped up. He was going to take it, and he was going to knock it over. In terms of it being the right or wrong call, of course it was the wrong call. Hawke's Bay, you know, come on. But no, look, Hawke's Bay were coming off their storm week. They got a very slow start. They were 19-5 down at half time, and sometimes those starts they do. Well, quite often they come back to bite you, and we also saw Bay of Plenty stumble twice after they went through an unbeaten storm week as well. So 4-2 to the Bay, but that McClutchy conversion that hit the upright in the end, knocked them back 2 bonus points. They lead the comp, but they played one more game than the unbeaten teams, Wellington and Tasman. You'll be wrapped with Auckland's performance.
Well, yeah. I was certainly wrapped with the final result, but it was a bit scrappy again from Auckland. They found themselves down at half time, but they were actually doing quite a lot of good stuff. But they weren't converting, and then they found themselves. I think that there was a key play at 78 minutes where the referee, Fraser Hannon, penalised Bryn Hall for time wasting. Mm. Now I couldn't get a good look at that. I don't think there was even a replay of that, but. Hall was protesting vociferously about that penalty. And then, of course, seconds later, Caleb Tungitau latched onto a Shay Clark offload and scored for the win. So Auckland hanging on by the skin of their teeth to win that one in a very tight battle of the bridge, certainly controversial. And there was a bit of push and shove, perhaps not as much as 30 years ago in the Battle of Oniwa, but that was a tremendous finish from Auckland, who played some pretty good rugby but didn't always convert when they had to. And once again, North Harbour, probably their third close defeat. So North Harbour are not a bad side, but they just they'll be gutted at dropping this one.
Yeah, apparently Bryn Hall was changing the ball because it was wet. Now, I can't see that. I just cannot see why you would need to do that to feed a scrum. So it seems a little bit odd. Tangatau, who's got a contract with the Highlanders, I think, for next year's Super Rugby, he looked very strong.
Yep, he did. It was a good finish. He's sort of been on the fringes of this Auckland side this season. I think he's had a couple of injury issues. I still think he should play on the left wing because he tends to carry the ball under his left arm. In fact, he even did on this try. So it's a bit hard to, if you're playing on the right wing, to be fending if the ball's tucked under your left arm. So that's a skill area he needs to look at. But he's got some raw pace and power, and he finished well for that try.
Incredibly, Tasman now face Wellington in a Shield challenge on Sunday in Blenheim. But this is Wellington's storm week. They play Otago on Wednesday. So it's going to be the hangover versus the hurting, Campbell.
Yes, it will be. I would expect Wellington will not play their strongest side in Dunedin midweek. They'll be trying to win, of course, and that'd still be a chance, even with several changes. But you'd have to think they'll put all their eggs in the Ranfurly Shield basket, and they'll head over the Cook Strait to Blenheim. And Yeah, I think Tasman will have to be ready for them. I'm sure they had a good night on Saturday night, but it'll be back to work today because Wellington are coming, and they certainly have the goods to mount a serious challenge.
Well, Wellington seem to be going out about their business better and better each week. I mean, they were 24-0 up against Southland with the wind, very strong wind, at Porirua on Saturday. And then they just, you know, grounded out in the second half for a 12-all second half. So they've got, you know, plenty of good players in there. If you look at the units with Numia, Delaney, Shields, players like that in the forwards, and some quite exciting backs.
Well, that's right. And the other question is, will they be able to have access to Reuben Love and Billy Proctor, who I'm sure are due back in the country Monday, Tuesday? You know, there's no reason why they shouldn't be released to perhaps either start or come off the bench, which would be a boost to them. So, and I think that goes for a lot of the, because the All Blacks took 36 to South Africa. A lot of these players should be in line to play NPC this weekend, which will make it even more exciting.
Oh, I think that's a very good call. And there's one or two players who are in the 23 who might need to run an NPC to get a few kinks out of their armour as well,
exactly,
I think.
Yeah.
Look, the Classic All Blacks playing the curtain raiser against the Northland Classic side before the Northland-Auckland game in Whangarei. That'll be a hoot as well. In the fourth round of Heartland Rugby, South Canterbury continued what is believed to be the longest winning streak in NPC rugby, 35 championship matches now, beating King Country 33-19. The other five matches were won by the visiting team. West Coast got up over Buller, Mid Canterbury over Horowhenua Kapiti, Ngāti Porou East Coast over North Otago, Wairarapa Bush beat Poverty Bay 39-24, their first win of the season. And in the Bill Osborne Tonga match, for the fourth time this season, it's moved on, with Whanganui inflicting Thames Valley's first loss of the season, 16-14. I'm sure you took an interest in that match, Campbell.
Well, I did, yeah. I knew that would be tight there. And incredibly, the Bill Osborne Tonga on the move again. The Rundle Cup went to West Coast as well. So there was a whole lot of trophies on the move on the weekend. The Freedom Cup, the Ranfurly Shield, well, of course, the top four first 15 schools was decided. And, and in the Heartland too. So it's been remarkable how that's moved around, the Bill Osborne Tonga. But Thames Valley only had 7 days with it. And now Whanganui have it. And yet South Canterbury, with a streak of 35, have not even challenged for it within that streak. Otherwise, they would have taken it. So, it'll be very interesting to see how that Heartland Championship pans out.
Yeah, I was just thinking during the week, a lot of people might not remember who Bill Osborne was. I mean, he was a Whanganui representative during a pretty long All Black career from 1975 to 82, 48 games, 16 tests. And rather than going through all the detail of that career, just this backline from 1980, the Welsh Centenary Test, full of genius, mavericks and crazies, really. Dave Loveridge, Nicky Allen, Osborne, Robertson, Stu Wilson, Bernie Fraser, and Doug Rollison. It was a thing of beauty, one of the best of the era, Campbell, I can tell you. Sadly, Alan Robertson and Rollison are no longer with us. So Bill Osborne, he made a massive contribution with that with his combination with Bruce Robertson. An absolute piece of trivia for you, mate. I was on Heartland Rugby on Sky Sport last week. You wouldn't have noticed. I was walking my dogs around Henley Lake and Masterton when I was surreptitiously filmed.
Oh, nice. So you were, rather than watching the game at Memorial Park, you were walking your dog around outside.
The fifth round of the Farrah Palmer Cup saw premiership wins for the competition's runaway leader, Counties Manukau. They beat the Auckland Storm, who are now, right on the cusp of missing out on the top four almost. Canterbury beat Northland. Waikato beat Hawke's Bay. Bay Plenty Volcanics the bye. Two rounds remaining in the round robin. The championship, the semi-finals have been decided. Manawatu Cyclones remained unbeaten with a 31-0 victory over North Harbour Hibiscus, and they'll go to battle again in the semi-final next Saturday. Wellington Pride beat Otago 51-13 in Dunedin, and they will again play, but this time in the capital in the other semi-final. But the big game of the weekend for women's rugby, Black Ferns playing England at Twickenham, 2 a.m. Sunday, Campbell, in front of what is going to be a massive crowd.
Yes, it sounds like it. It sounds like they're gunning for a world record crowd, which I think came in the women's sevens at the Olympics. It might have been in the vicinity of 66,000. So that will be huge. And we just hope that the Black Ferns can perform well. I think it'll be a big ask for them to win, because England beat France over the weekend. So England will probably have more match fitness under them. Some of these Black Ferns haven't played in a couple of months, so I just hope they give a good account of themselves because it's a year out from Rugby World Cup. So we wouldn't like to give England too much of a psychological hold there. So I don't have high hopes for a victory from the Black Ferns, but certainly looking for a decent performance. And if they can combat that English line-out drive, that will go some way towards that.
Yeah, well, I think they sold something like 36,000 tickets by last week, so they were definitely heading over the 40,000 mark, they were saying. So that's going to be an amazing occasion for those young women before they go off to the WXV1. Look, the All Blacks now go into a little bit of a break, but this series against Australia is now looming extremely large for the season because there's not many easy games to come. You know, there's Japan and Italy, perhaps we should be expected to win, but France, England and Ireland are certainly not gimmies by any means on the Northern Hemisphere tour. So Scott Robertson will really want to make a good job and pick up two comprehensive victories in these next two outings.
Absolutely, and I'm sure the All Blacks are capable of that. The Wallabies just haven't got the team on paper, really, you would think, to compete with the All Blacks, who, after all, possibly could have and should have won one or two tests against the number one side in the world. So there is a gap there, but the All Blacks have got to show it because the Wallabies will come firing in Sydney for sure. But certainly a 2-0 Bledisloe series victory. I wouldn't say on the cards, but that should be the aim, and two really good performances heading into that Northern tour. But yes, like you, I don't have confidence that the All Blacks will definitely win more than two games on that Northern tour, other than Japan and Italy, because they'll have some fearsome challenges from England, France and Ireland there. So there's a bit of pressure on now for the All Blacks. So we expect them to respond after defeats, and it's got to happen for the Bledisloe, because if they drop the test in Sydney, then they head to Wellington, which hasn't been their favourite ground at all, and there'll be almighty pressure that week if that's the case.
Well, I always like to believe in the All Blacks, you know, but what do you see around the selection as we go into Australia? Will Robertson be conservative as he has been? You see for me, TJ Perenara didn't fire off the bench. He's not. I don't like him as a bench player. I've got to be honest. No. So there's a player I would have rather seen Noah Hotham playing, to be honest. And you know, there's a number of areas. Mark Talia, I think, is out of form. I think he needs to go back to NPC. You know, I think there's a couple of guys who need to come out of that side and others go in. Where do you see the possibility of change?
Well, I'd like to hope that Caleb Clark will be back in the mix, and also Ethan de Groot. Patrick Tuipuloto, not sure there, but the main issues are not so much in the forwards. You could argue maybe a tweak on the bench with the loose trio, but there's not a lot they can change there. De Groot may come onto the bench, but it's money in the back line, and certainly the halves, possibly centre, and certainly the back three. Mm. So there's if Clark comes in, that's great. Jordan's has to be there, but whether it's at fullback or right wing, we're not too sure. I agree with that Mark Talia would be better placed going back to North Harbour to regain some form. And what do they do with Rico Ioane? He didn't play poorly, but is he offering full value at centre? Does Billy Proctor come into view? So, and I guess at the end of the day, it's that question. The driver, Damien McKenzie, who has goal kicked quite well up until the weekend, does he have an eighth chance to start? Do you persevere with him? Do you look at Beauden Barrett? That's really the only way they could go for that starting 10 jersey. But it's an important one to nail, because it's been in the back line, and particularly late in the game where there's been trouble for the All Blacks.
Yeah, and I don't know what Stephen Perifetta's status is, but I felt he played pretty well earlier in the program before his injury. So, you know, he's another one who could come into the mix. And not forgetting Ruben Love, who hasn't even had a game yet. But, yeah, it's interesting times, but we'll talk more about that next week. Just before we go, I want to mention a special gathering this coming weekend, which will be of interest to anyone with the love of the Ramfurly Shield, and in particular the latest Ramfurly Shield holders. Survivors of the South Canterbury rugby team who won the Ramfurly Shield off Marlborough in 1974, defended it once against North Otago and lost it to Wellington 9-3, will be gathering for a 50th anniversary reunion this coming weekend, where they will watch today's South Canterbury team take on North Otago. One of the 1974 players said the team team were teammates back then, but as the years have gone by, you know, they've become more like family. That is what it can mean to win the log of wood. On behalf of Campbell Burns, editor of Rugby News Magazine, I'm Grant Harding. Catch you next week.